Hare Krishna. So I would like to welcome all our guests and devotees to the fourth session of ours in the Science of Self-Realization, the Essence of the Gita. Yesterday, we discussed in detail about according to the essence of Vedas, of Upanishads in the form of Bhagavad Gita, who the cause of all causes, who is the ultimate controller, proprietor and supreme enjoyer is. And we discussed how that personality is none other than the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna himself. And we discussed little in detail about what is the difference between God with a capital G and the devatas, demigods, Bhagavan and the devatas. How the devatas are part of this creation, they are created by the Supreme. They are subordinate controllers, empowered by the Lord to manage the affairs of the universe, relatively more empowered than the living entities on this planet Earth. And we discussed about how he descends sometimes to perform wonderful activities to attract the heart of the living entities and purify themselves. Today we will be discussing this topic about who am I, or the science of soul. Because just knowing the cause of all causes is not enough. We have to know who are we in relationship with the Supreme so that we can know what is our duty. If a person is asked to enter a big company and said, go and work there. And he will say, tell me who I am first of all in this organization. Am I the manager? Am I the worker? Where do I fit in into the picture? And then according to my status, I will do my activities. So therefore, one has to understand who we are. And what is our position in relationship with the Supreme. So today we will discuss this particular topic. Who am I? In the Bhagavad Gita, in fact in the very beginning itself, Krishna makes it very clear to Arjuna about the real identity of all living entities. It is said there that our real identity is we are not this temporary body but the eternal soul. This body is temporary. It is born, it stays for some time and it dies. But then the soul, which is the resident of the body, is eternal. There is no death and there is no birth for the soul. It is eternal, undying and primeval. To get a little understanding of what the soul is, there is an incident described. Once there was a sage whose name was Lomasa Rishi. This Rishi was given a benediction that his one hair would fall in one day of Brahma. And he would die only when all the hairs of his body would fall off. Now, one day of Brahma is a really long time. The scriptures describe, what is the lifespan of Brahma? Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyat brahmano viduhu. The day, the age that we are living in is called Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, the duration is 4,32,000 years, of which we have passed only 5,000 years. That means 4,27,000 years to go. Prior to that was Dwapara Yuga, and that was double of Kali Yuga, 8,64,000 years. Prior to Dwapara Yuga was Treta Yuga, and that was three times Kali Yuga. That means 12,96,000. And prior to that was Satyuga. That means four times Kali Yuga. And that is 17,28,000 years. So, in order, Sat, Treta, Dwapar and Kali Yuga, they repeat itself. This cycle. This one cycle, Yuga cycle, means Satyuga, 17,28,000, Treta, 12,96,000, Dwapar Yuga, 8,64,000, and Kali Yuga, 4,32,000. This cycle is called one Yuga cycle, which comes to approximately 43 lakhs of years. Now, when 43 lakhs of years go like this, then this is one one cycle. 78 times when this happens, that is called one manvantara. And in one manvantara, all the devatas change. That means 43 lakhs into 78. And when 14 times all the manvantaras change, that is one day of Brahma. That means 1000 times 43 lakhs of years. That is one day of Brahma. 12 hours. So 43 lakhs into 1000. Into 2. That means his day and his night. Now this Lomas Rishi was given a benediction that he would die only when all the hairs of his body would fall. And in one day of Brahma, his one hair would fall. One day this Rishi was sitting on the banks of the Ganges and deep in meditation, and the sun was scorching. So his disciples decided to build a hut above him so that he will be protected from the sun. And when Lomas Rishi came to, you know, consciousness, he just looked around. He said, what are you doing? They said, no, we are building you a nice hut so that you can be comfortable. So Lomas Rishi said, life is too short. Don't waste your time in this. Lomas Rishi is saying this, who has a lifespan of innumerable numbers of years. In addition to that, Lomas Rishi was a very hairy personality. So you can imagine how long he's going to live. But he says, life is too short. But somehow the great illusion is, we think that we are going to live eternally. But the fact is, the body is, right from day one, actually it's like an arrow shot. It's a question of time. From the womb to the tomb, the journey has already begun. Whereas the soul is eternal. Now, again, what is the proof for the existence of the soul? Because we have to be very scientific. Anyone can claim anything, but we have to be very scientific and systematic to understand things. Let's try to understand what is the evidence for the existence of the soul. Firstly, it's all together. Firstly, common sense, which is uncommonly found, as they say. Common sense says that we are not this body. When someone dies, people start beating their chest and say, so and so has passed away. Right? Guzar gaye. Now, who has passed away? If we are the body is lying right there. Why don't we now nourish the body, feed the body, embrace the body? We say, so and so has passed away. So common sense tells that actually whom we thought we are having a relationship with is not the body, but someone else who was living within the body. It is amazing that the same personality who was so much lovable, you could not live without that person even for a moment. What is it? The absence of which makes that person so abominable that you don't want to stay, you can't live with him anymore. As early you can get rid of the body, the better. I had this experience many years ago when one of my relatives died. Old man, 60 years, and his wife, 55 years. I was the only male member around that time. So she requested me to be there with him for the night before their children could come from overseas and other places and do the last rites. And that night, because it was kept on ice and all that, I was asked to stay with the body. This was the person on whose lap I was brought up, very dear to me. But that night I was so scared to sleep in the same room with that person. In fact, every time I would see, I hope he wouldn't get up. And then the night I was thinking, why am I so scared? I used to love this person so much, but today I am afraid that he will get up. And I couldn't get a sleep, waiting for the morning. And that lady who was with him for 45 or so years, like a shadow, together, eating together, walking together, reading newspaper together, everything together. And I asked her, you would like to stay in the same room? She said, no, you be there, I will be in the next room. So, at that time I was thinking, what is it, the presence of which makes the body so lovable, so adorable, and the absence of which makes that body so obnoxious that we... Earlier we took a bath and touched that person. Now we touch that person and take a bath to purify ourselves. Isn't it interesting? This needs to be meditated on. What is it? The presence of which makes the body alive, full of energy, life. And the absence of which makes it simply disintegrate, degrade in time. That is common sense. Next is intuitive understanding. It's surprising. Very intuitively, our language indicates that we are not the body. Have you ever thought about it? For example, we say, my hand, my leg, my nose. Right? We don't say, I hand, I leg, I nose. Just like I say, this is my shawl, this is my kurta. I don't say, I shawl, I kurta. Because I know, I am not this kurta, I am not this shawl. This shawl and this kurta belongs to me. Similarly, we say, my hand, my leg. If you say, my hand and my leg, who is me? Who am I? To whom belongs this hand and leg? So intuitively, we are indicating through our language that this body belongs to me, but I am not this body. I am something different from the body. And if I am different, who is that? Consciousness. What is the symptom? Okay, somebody says, all right, theoretically it makes sense. But what is the proof of the existence of soul? I remember one time there was a medical college, we were speaking, and somebody stood up and challenged and he said, can you show me the soul? If you show, then I'll agree. We will accept. Then I started to argue. I told him, there are so many things that you can't see. But you have to accept based on some symptoms. You can't see the air, but you can feel the air. There are some things we can't see through our eyes. We may feel through other senses. There are some things which we can't even feel through the senses. We have to just see the symptoms and understand. For example, I asked him, do you have a mind? Yes. No, you have to show me. Unless you show, I won't accept. Will you take out the mind and show me? But we see the face of a person, I say, oh, your mind is very disturbed. How? Face is the index of the mind. Right? By symptom on the face, I know that, oh, this man is very disturbed. Or this man is very happy. This man is very sad. His mind is disturbed. His mind is happy. His mind is sad. We know by the symptoms. Though, we don't see the mind. Subtler than the mind is the intelligence. We don't see anyone's intelligence. And if you break his head and take out the gray matter, that's not intelligence. Elephant may have more gray matter than the human being, but that's not indication. What is the sign of intelligence? Someone is quick to grasp something, some point, then we say, my God, he's very intelligent. Quickly he grasped it. In fact, the International Association of Mentally Handicapped, international organization, they define intelligence as the ability to adapt to a new environment. How quickly you can adapt to the subtleties, nuances, finer nuances of an environment. A person whose intelligence is very less, sometimes children are very mentally retarded, their growth is very retarded. To get adjusted to their own environment, they take a long time. What to speak of being introduced to a new environment? If you're put in a different culture, their eating habits are different and all that. You take a long time to, if you're smart, you can quickly understand the subtle nuances. How to talk, how to walk, how to eat, how to do things. But if you're dull, it takes time. So intelligence cannot be understood by putting it, you know, putting your head on a scale and measuring your, no. You can understand one's intelligence, amount of intelligence, through some tests, IQ tests. That's one, how you perform on it. Or how quickly people grasp some subtle points. So by that, we can know. But you can't see the intelligence. So I said, you can't see the intelligence, that means you don't have. Do you agree that? No. So the point is, when something is gross, it can be measured, seen, touched, felt, smelt, etc. But when things become more subtler, they can be known only through their symptoms. Now, if we say there is soul, what is the symptom of the soul? The symptom of soul is consciousness. Wherever you see consciousness, there must be the existence of the soul. If something you cut off the hand of a dead body, he's not conscious. But something happens, even while you're talking, something touches, some hard thing touches, you're quick to react. Because a dead body can't react, though everything else is there. The brain is there, the heart is there, everything is there. But something is there which is not functioning and therefore it is totally unconscious. The body is dead. There is no consciousness. In the animals, there is consciousness. In fact, even in the trees, there is consciousness. There are some trees who are very touch me not. It's called a touch me not. You touch it and immediately it's sensitive. It just closes down. There are certain trees which an insect comes, immediately it closes. They're conscious of any movement. In fact, the trees move towards the source of light, sun. If you put a sun, they grow like this. That means they're conscious of light. Though it may be very dull, but the consciousness is there. The table is not conscious. The microphone or these things, a dead matter, may not be conscious. But anything living, life is there, means it has soul. Wherever there is consciousness, that is a symptom of soul. There are so many studies conducted by scientists all over the world who have no background of Vedic literature, who have no understanding of existence of soul, but independently, separately, they have studied certain phenomena by which they have come to a conclusion that no, life exists even beyond the bodily platform. Many, many studies have been done like that. I would like to just mention three kinds of studies. One kind of study is called as near-death experiences. It's called the NDE study or OBE, out-of-body experience. Many, many studies all over the world it has happened. But the principle of this study is, a person is declared to be dead. His ECG is flat, his EEG is flat. Everything is flat, including the person. Now, for all practical purposes, such a person is dead. They have tried resuscitation, artificial breathing, nothing has happened. No response for about more than half an hour, 45 minutes. And just before they are about to pack up the body and send to the relatives for final rites, that person has revived, come back to life. And after coming back to life, he has reported that he was out of the body, hanging somewhere in the air and watching his body and what was happening in the room at that time, perfectly. In fact, there was one German fellow. When he was operated on the table, he collapsed on the table, he died. And half an hour later, he came back. When they were about to give up, he came back. And he started, after the operation, chastising the doctor. He said, I was dead, and you were talking to the nurse about the golf you played this morning. The doctor was shocked. He said, how did you know? You were dead. Clinically, you were dead. So these cases are called near-death experience or out-of-body experience, where a person is clinically declared to be dead, but after a few, sometimes half an hour, or an hour, or sometimes more, the person comes back and reports everything that went on when he was supposed to be dead. This is called near-death experiences. And one of the pioneers in this study is one Dr. Michael Sabom from the Emory Medical School. This man has studied many, many cases. And at the conclusion of all these studies, his conclusion is, he says, that at the time of death, there is the mind that separates from the body. And he says, is the mind which separates from the body what the spiritualists are calling the soul? This is his conclusion of his study. So he says that there is some existence there beyond the bodily platform, because when the person is clinically dead, he still existed, he was watching himself from a different realm, away from the body. These are one kind of studies. The second kind of study, which indicate the existence of life beyond bodily existence, is called past life memories. Past life memory means a person dies at a particular date. Months later, a child is born some other place. And when the child grows up to be 2.5, 3 year old, he starts saying that I am so and so from this village, my husband's name is this, my wife's name is this, my children are this. I want to go back to my village. And he starts speaking in a different language which he's never exposed to perfectly. As if it is his mother tongue. Now, a 3-year-old child, you can't expect them to speak some other language perfectly. They speak perfectly the other language. And they want, they give perfect details. And scientists of impeccable credentials, through very systematic study, ruling out all fabrications, have come to the conclusion that this person, this child, is none other than the same fellow who died so many years ago in some particular other place. Sometimes in different countries, sometimes in different states, sometimes in different localities, sometimes in the same village, sometimes in the neighborhood. Can be so close, it can be so far. I will in the slideshow discuss about many, many cases. But one of the pioneers in this field, past life memories, is one Dr. Ian Stevenson, professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia. One of his students is Dr. Mrs. Satwan Pasricha. She is the associate professor of psychology at the National Institute of Mental Health and Neurosciences. This lady has studied over 400 cases. A few years back, I went to Bangalore. I met this lady. I have all the photographs of these cases and I have the whole book of her studies, and I would like to show it in the slideshow of so many cases where children have reported that I was so and so, and given such details which no one can know, very, very intimate details about the lives of the other family, which there is no chance anyone knowing, other than if that person was intimately related to the other person. So these are called past life memories. We will discuss during the slideshow. Another recent study that I came across is called astral body travel. Astral body travel means a person, through scientific ways, leaves this body, goes to some other place, experiences something, comes back and reports where he went, what he did. Two brothers from Germany, they are doing these studies. I wanted to have the slides not been made. But we find the yogis would do this. At that time their body is dead practically, but it is stored in a place so that it doesn't decay. They go elsewhere, enter some other body, experience a different realm, then leave that and come back and enter their own body. This is called astral body travel. Or in a subtle body, they go and come back. So this shows that life does exist beyond just the body. The body is not all in all. There is life even beyond the body. But however intellectual the scientists may be, however powerful their speculation may be and their studies, it's very difficult to know everything about the nature of the soul. But the scriptures give elaborate detail about what the soul is, what is the nature and characteristics of the soul. In fact, you don't have to do any research. Everything has already been done. That's the Vedas. Vedas means all the research has been done. The results are declared. So only a question of faith, through proper sources you can have, to access this precious knowledge. Unfortunately, if this knowledge is not systematically and scientifically presented, people think that they are mythology. But slowly people are coming back actually to the same situation and platform. So let's briefly discuss what the Bhagavad Gita says about the nature and characteristics of the soul. Yeah. Yeah. So it is described, in fact, the first few instructions of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita actually describes about the nature of the soul. The first thing that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita about the soul is indestructible. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha, nachainam kledayantyapo, na shoshayati marutaha. He says, na enam chindanti shastrani. Any kind of weapons cannot cut the soul to pieces. You can't cut the soul by any kind of weapons. Nainam chindanti shastrani. Na enam dahati pavakaha. Pavakaha means fire. No amount, no kind of fire can burn the soul. Na chainam kledayanti apaha. Any kind of water, acids, or any kind of solutions cannot dissolve the soul. It's not that you put in sulfuric acid and it will get dissolved. No. Na shoshayati marutaha. Air cannot wither the soul. Weapons cannot cut it. Fire cannot burn it. Solutions cannot dissolve it. Air cannot wither the soul. Most powerful structures in the universe, anything that is material, over a period of time, either the weapons destroy it, or fire burns it through sun, through rain, through air. Everything disintegrates. Even the most powerful structures, all the great empires built by solid stone, huge columns and structures, today are simply in a dilapidated state. But the soul is indestructible by anything material. No weapon, no fire, no water, no air can ever affect the soul. It is indestructible. Achedyoyam, adahyoyam, akledyo, ashosha evacha. Nitya sarvagata sthanur achaloyam sanatana. He says it is indestructible. Next is, the soul is an individual. The soul is in your body is different from the soul in my body. The soul in my body is different from the soul in his body or her body or everyone's, an animal's body or a plant's body. All the souls in individual bodies are an individual entity. They are separate. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Natve vaham jatunasam, natvam neme janadhipaha, nachaivana bhavishyamaha, sarve vayamatah param. O Arjun, there was never a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all the kings who are gathered in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, nor in the future shall any of us ever cease to be. That means all of us individually, eternally will continue to exist. The body may perish, but the soul will not, and eternally they will remain separate individual. Even after a liberation, they continue to remain individual. Because the soul is an individual entity, it will maintain its individuality. The soul is Satchidananda. Now it sounds very esoteric. What is the Satchidananda? But what it means is very simple. Sat means eternal. Chit means full of knowledge. And Ananda means full of bliss. That is the constitutional nature of the soul. Why is it that none of us think that we are going to die? Have you ever thought about it? In fact, in the Mahabharata, there is a beautiful incident. When the Pandavas in the forest, one day they become very thirsty, and Yudhishthira Maharaj tells to youngest brother Sahadev, go and get a water. And about to drink the water, there is a yaksha who says, if you drink this water, first answer my question, otherwise you will die. He says, no, I'll answer later, first I'll drink. And he actually dies. Then Nakul comes, he dies. Bhima comes, dies. Arjuna comes, dies. Yudhishthira Maharaj goes, is about to drink, and the yaksha says, You will get the same result as your brothers if you don't answer my questions. And Yudhishthir Maharaj asks, all right, fire your questions. Like a quiz contest, you know. Fire, rapid fire. And what follows in the Mahabharata is a very interesting question answer session. Beautiful questions and amazing answers. But that's not the topic for today. So I will not go into that. But one very interesting question that Yaksha, who is actually Yamraj, who is testing the Lord of Death, he is asking. He asks Yudhishthir Maharaj, what is the most amazing thing in this world? What is the most wonderful thing? And what did you think? Yudhishthir replied. He didn't say the seven wonders of the world. Hanging Garden of Babylonia, Great Wall of China. I don't know whether they existed at that time. 5,000 years, right? So, Yudhishthir Maharaj replies, very interesting, listen to this. Ahani ahani bhutani gachanti hi yamalayam sheshasthavaram icchanti kimascharyamatah param. He says, ahani ahani bhutani. Ahani ahani means many, many innumerable bhutani, living entities. Gachanti hi yamalayam. Every day people are dying. Pick up the newspaper. So many died out of earthquake. So many fell from the building, collapse or whatever. All day in and day out people are dying. So many people are entering the mouth of death. Gachanti hi yamalayam. But sheshaha, the remaining ones, sthavaram icchanti, they want to live permanently here itself. Kim aascharyam atah param. He says, what can be more wonderful than this? No one has ever lived long. Everyone dies, but everyone thinks that I am an exception case. Even a 95-year fellow has a 20-year plan how to enjoy life. Isn't it amazing? Sometimes you go to this Baikala Sabji market, you see, you know, all this goat standing in line, about to be slaughtered in a slaughterhouse. And one by one, they're brought, slaughtered, brought and slaughtered. They're in a line. And one is being slaughtered, the other fellow is just chewing the grass, happily, blissfully unaware that his number is going to come next. Similarly, that's all our situation. Can you imagine if you were made to stand in a line and there is a machine that just chops off the head and you are going and then you are given an ice cream in hand. Eat till you go there. Will you just go on licking the ice cream when the your next number is next? You will be sweating. You can't taste the ice cream. In fact, it will melt in your hand. But amazingly, surprisingly, everyone knows they're going to die, as sure as death. But no one is planning about it. Nobody is even thinking. In fact, like an ostrich, they don't want to talk about it. Come on, don't be so pessimistic. Why do you talk about death? It's too far. And we are chewing our grass of enjoyment. No problem. He says, what can be more wonderful than this? So Sat, that's the nature. Actually, why? Why do we feel like that? In spite of the fact that people are dying, we don't feel we will die. Because actually we don't die. For the soul, there is no birth. For the soul, there is no death. For the soul, there is no old age. For the soul, there is no disease. The soul is na jayate mriyate va kadachin na ayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuyah ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Krishna says na jayate, the soul is never born. Na mriyate, the soul never dies. Na ayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuyah, never was the time that soul did not exist, is not existing, or will not exist. Ajaha, it is unborn. Nityaha, eternal. Shashvataha, everlasting. Purano, primeval. Nahanyate, hanyamane, sharire. When the body is killed, the soul is not killed. So therefore, when the soul identifies itself with the body, thinking that this is me, I am Ramesh, Mahesh, Suresh, Dinesh, whatever, I am an Indian. And you want to make the body, which is asat, into sat, then starts all the problem. So that is the nature of the soul. Why we feel that we are not going to die? Because actually we never die, the soul never dies. But this dress, the body, that has to be taken off at a particular time when it is worn out. Chit, the soul is full of knowledge. What is education? The word education comes from the word educari, which means to bring out what is within. All knowledge is within. The purpose of education is to create such an environment to bring out the nature of the soul. The soul is chit, full of knowledge. It's a fact. Sometimes children watch this Mahabharata serial or Ramayana serial. After watching, they come out and, you know, when Mahabharata is going on, everyone makes bow and arrow and start shooting, or Ramayana is going on, make this bow and arrow and start shooting at each other. And when children come out and play, you know what they say? I am Ram, you are Ravan, come let us play. Or they watch Mahabharata serial, I am Arjun, you are Duryodhan, come let us play. Nobody says, I am Duryodhan and you are Arjun, come let us play. No. How do they know who is right, who is wrong? It's a natural instinct. Unfortunately, even that is curbed today in the name of education. But otherwise, the nature of the soul is, it is knowledgeable. It has to be just brought out, uncovered. Chit. That is the process of education, to bring out the actual nature of the soul, which is full of consciousness. Therefore, it is called self-realization. You have the wealth. You have to realize you have it. It's not called self-understanding or self-intellectualization. No, it's called self-realization. The knowledge is there within, but you have to put yourself in an environment where that natural propensity of the soul manifests. Then, ananda. Why none of us want to be unhappy? Why all of us are looking for happiness? Because the nature of the soul is blissful, anandamaya. But when we think we are the body and we look for happiness on the bodily platform, then we look for sense gratification. The eyes look for some good things, ears look for something, what we discussed in the first day. But nobody realizes that the soul is thirsty. Real ananda is only when the soul is satisfied. Simply satisfying the senses and looking for ananda, you won't find it. Real ananda is the nature of the soul. The soul must be satisfied. Why we are all looking for happiness? Because that's the nature of the soul. So therefore, the soul is Satchid Ananda, eternal, knowledgeable, fully knowledgeable, cognizant, and blissful. And the body is just the opposite. Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. It is Asat, it's bound to die. Achit, it's full of ignorance. You may do PhD this lifetime. Next life you have to begin with ABCD. You can't say, last time I did PhD, you know. Now I'll do the double PhD. Next birth. No. When you are born, it's a new slate. You have to begin from square one. And the body is a source of nirananda, source of misery. It grows old, it gets diseased, it's going to die, etc. Next. Somebody may say, where is the soul? Can I peep into the ear or nose or the mouth? That's described in the Gita or in the Upanishads. Esho anuratma chetasa veditavyo pranais chittam sarvamotam prajanam. Esho anuratma. This atma chetasa veditavyo. You can only know through refined intelligence. Only a refined, intelligent gentleman can understand this soul. A man with dull intelligence cannot understand this. Pranai chittam. The soul is situated in the region of the heart. Also, it's very interesting. When you love someone, you say, I love you. You don't say, I love you. Do you hold your head and say, I love you? There's something wrong if you say, you again. Why do you say, oh, it's so... When you love someone, why they show the heart? Why they don't show the brain? Why they show intestine? You say, oh, I love you. That means here. I am here and you are also here. You have a place very close to me. Right? Intuitive. It's very intuitive. So that means everything is there, but only thing is we are so dull we don't realize. Therefore, introspection, self-introspection, nature is created in such a way that if you deeply introspect, nature reveals the message of God in every element of creation. But we have become so busy in just eating, sleeping, mating and defending that we don't see the beautiful creation and the miracles and the message that is being sent by the Lord. So, pranai chittam sarvamotam prajanam. Actually, the soul is situated in the region of the heart. When the heart, it's very interesting that the first thing is the heart stops beating. Whole life the heart is beating. Love, dub, right? Now, for any instrument to work, you need to charge it. Battery goes away. So, at night, do you put your heart for charging in the plug point somewhere? And the whole day it beats? How is it that the heart is just beating? Now, the scientists may play in so many chemicals, whatever. You put all the chemicals in a dead heart and make it beat. They can't. Any amount of chemicals being introduced, any electricity introduced, can't make a dead heart beat again. Bring back a person to life. If you are simply chemicals, introduce the chemicals and make him alive. You can't, because the person has walked away. The actual personality has gone. He's dead. So what is it that makes the heart beat? It's actually the soul. The soul changes bodies. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara. तथा देहांतर प्राप्तिर धीरस्तत्र मुह्यति. The Gita says, Dehinah asmin yatha dehe. This body is called Deha. And the resident of the body is called Dehi. So there are two things, Deha and Dehi. So Krishna says in the Gita, Dehinah asmin yatha dehe. In this body, the soul is there. But the body is changing. What to speak of, you may say, I don't know who is able to see whether after death we change body. Forget about that. Even within this body, we are changing our bodies every few years. Kaumaram, we were all young children, small, you know, few pounds. Then we became boys or girls. Then we became adolescents. Then we became adults. Then we grow old. Then we die. Every 7 years, the medical science has confirmed, not one cell of the body remains the same. Did you know this? Not one cell of the body is the same. Every 7 years, you have a new model. But somehow, you don't think you have changed. Some relatives have come, oh, you've grown so big. I never realized. But then we don't feel like that because actually we are the same. But the body is changing. It's growing, as we were discussing yesterday. In the beginning stage, youth, the growth rate is fast and the decay rate is lesser because the model is new, just like a new model car. You know, no repairs. First few years you can enjoy. But afterwards, repairs are more and the maintenance, you know, and the facility is less. Then you dispose of the car. Initially, the growth is more of cells because it's a fresh body. And decay is less. Therefore, there is growth. At middle age, the growth rate and the decay rate is common. Therefore, there is stability. as we grow old, the decay rate is faster and the growth rate becomes lesser. That's why, you know, when old people get fractured, very difficult to, you know, for them to get to repair it. Whereas young children, they have, you know, every time, every few days they have plasters here and there. But, you know, immediately it's all right. Because the growth is there. The body is always changing. Growth is happening. Decay is happening. But we don't feel that because we don't change. The soul, the real self doesn't change. When the body is worn out, when the body is totally, just like when you have a car and the car becomes a useless thing, you know, for maintenance you spend more than what you get from it, then you think of disposing the car and buying a new model. So if you have a 1902 model in 1999, it's very old, then you want to dispose of and buy 2000 model. Right? Similarly, when this body becomes totally useless, the soul says this is totally useless. It gives up this body to take on a new body. 1 minute. It is infinitesimally small. Now you may say, "Acha, we are not the body, we are the soul. Can we see the soul? Now we have a powerful microscope, so we can zero in." Actually, it is very, very small. How small? The Upanishads describe. Kesha agra shatabhagasya shatadha kalpitasya cha. Kesha agra, pull out a hair. And the tip of the hair, kesha agra, agra means front portion. Shatabhagasya, you divide it into 100 pieces. Take one piece and divide that into again 100. That is the size of the soul, approximately. 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair. This is the size of the soul. Kesha agra shatabhagasya shatadha kalpitasya cha. If you imagine the tip of the hair being cut into 10,000 pieces, if you can imagine what will be the size of that one piece, 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair, that is the size of the soul. And the size of the soul in a microbe, in a bacteria, in a virus is the same as the size of the soul in the elephant and the giraffe. It's not that the elephant has a big soul and a rhinoceros has a long soul and a giraffe has a tall soul. No, same soul, 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, whether you are a wrestler or you are a featherweight. The soul is same. 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. Just imagine how powerful is the soul. Just 1/10,000 the tip of the body, and the elephant is moving and a 80 kilo man is moving, probably running, jogging. And if the same soul lives, it takes 4 men to carry. Ram Naam Satya Hai. And they also get exhausted after some time. The body becomes so heavy. But 1/10,000 tip of the hair, the soul is so powerful, it carries the body. He may jump and get Olympic high jump gold also. Isn't it amazing? That's the power of the soul. Then somebody may see, all right, if it is so small, is it possible to, you know, put under an electron microscope, super electron microscope, and just let us see the soul? No. Because the Gita says, avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. Avyakta. Vyakta means it can be seen, perceived by the senses. Avyakta means it cannot be seen by the gross material senses. To the gross material senses, it cannot be seen. Not only that, achintyoyam. It is inconceivable. You can't even conceive it in your mind. Why? Because the soul is not made of matter. The soul is not matter. The soul is made of spirit. Therefore, even though the soul is 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, through our gross eyes, or through our gross senses, even with very powerful instruments, we can never see the soul. Or we can never, that's why it is said, Ascharyavat Pashyati Kashchidenam, Ascharyavat Vadati Tathaiva Chanyaha, Ascharyavat Chainam Anya Shrunoti, Shrutvapyenam Vedana Chaiva Kashchid. Somebody hear about the soul as amazing, somebody think about the soul as amazing, but in spite of all of this, no one can ever understand what is the soul. It requires spiritual intelligence to appreciate the presence of the soul. It is not matter, it is spirit. Then you may say, what is the difference? What is the difference between matter and spirit? Go to the next. Yeah, one. So, actually, the difference is very simple. Matter can be in and of itself has no form. It is the presence of the spirit which gives form to matter. Matter is simply a lump, but spirit is living principle. Spirit gives life to matter. Otherwise, matter is dead. And the spirit soul has a form, therefore the body has a form. Just like this kurta and the shirt has a form because the body has a form. If the body did not have two hands, you wouldn't have had a shirt with two hands. So it's like that. The body has form, the matter has form because the spirit soul has form. And we will discuss that there are three kinds of bodies we have. You will be surprised to know. Not one. There are three bodies we have. The first is the gross body that you are seeing, I am seeing of each other. This is gross body. Under that is the subtle body. Sukshma, sthula. What you are seeing is sthula deha, sthula sharira or gross body. Under that is the sukshma deha, sukshma sharira or subtle body. And under that is the spirit soul. So the body, what you and I see of each other, is the gross body. And this gross body is made up of, can you go now? Five elements. Bhumir apo analo vayu kham. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhumi is the earth matter. Next. Water, apaha. Then anala, then vayu, then kham. These are the five elements of which this body is made. Ultimately, that's all, nothing else. Just like this building is made up of maybe some cement, some iron, some water that is mixed, and then some wood or whatever. Few basic items composes any building. Similarly, any body, an ant's body, a tree's body, or a man's body, or anything. It is made up of five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. Earth element is that element which when the body is burnt, some ashes remain. So that earth element turns into ashes. That is the earth element. Then there is water element. The blood is flowing. There is plasma. In fact, 70% of human body is watery element. If the watery element was not there, the blood and the lymph and the plasma would not flow. If the blood is clotted somewhere, finished, we will die. The blood is always moving. That is the watery element. Bhumir apo. Then there is fire. You may say, what? Fire in body? Fire is applied only after we die. No. This is a subtle fire. Just like fire burns, right? Acids. These acids are there within the body. Digestive juices. Otherwise, when you eat food, how is it digested? That's why it is called Jathar Agni. If your Jathar Agni goes poor, then you can't digest. Those who have digestive problems, it's because they have no digestive fire. Acids are produced. That's why you say hyperacidity. When you have hyperacidity, too much of acid is created, or if you know, don't take something to consume, then it starts burning your intestines. And therefore, you start feeling pain. So many acids are there. Actually, the body is like an oven. That's why you put a thermometer 98.6. If it goes below that, finished. Or if it is too much heated up, then it's finished. Above 108. So this is like, it's a thermostat. You have to maintain the body temperature. And temperature means there is a fire. Without fire, how can there be body temperature? So there is a, it's like an oven. Fire is always going on. It should not cool down. That's why we put sweater, etc. in cold, so that we don't become too cold. The body temperature shouldn't fall down. Or when there is a too much fire, then you apply ice cold water to bring the fire to a particular level. Otherwise it burns. So this is the fiery element. Bhumi, Apo, Analo. Then there is Vayu, air. Air element is there, prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana. There are five kinds of air. Pancha prana. And these, as long as these kinds of airs are moving properly, everything is moving smoothly. If there is a disturbance, vata roga, you know, where the air is disturbed, then the movement is disturbed. Sometimes you have these hydraulic doors, you know. They move smoothly. Otherwise you just leave it and just it hits back. So the movement of the body is due to the balancing of the five kinds of airs. Upgoing air, downgoing air and things like this. So if these five kinds of airs, pranayam, why do we do pranayam? To maintain the balance. If you don't maintain the balance, then you have problems in the body. So bhumir, apo, analo, vayu, then there is kham, ether, ethereal element, space. Inter and intracellular space is occupied by this ether element. The body occupies some space, that's called ether element. So in this way, the gross body that we see is made up of earth, water, fire, air and ether. But there is also a subtle body. And the subtle body is made up of three elements. Mind, mana, buddhi, ahankar. Mind, intelligence and ego. And it is the mind, intelligence and ego which is doing the activity within. The mind has three functions. Just like before you leave this room, you already decide, I have to go out from the gate, take a bus or a rickshaw, go to the station, from there take a train and go home. Only after that you start walking. So first you think, then you feel that I have to do that, then you will, and then you act. So that is the function of the mind, to plan before acting. I have planned what I'm going to speak. Then only I'm speaking. I'm not sitting and just, you know, whatever is coming in my mouth. So this is done by the mind. And then intelligence does the function of discriminating. What I should speak to this audience, what I should not speak. How I should speak, how I should not speak. What is correct, what is wrong. What is truth, what is false. That discrimination is made by the intelligence. What to do, what not to do. That is the subtle function. And then there is the mithya ahankar. So that is the last chain which connects to the soul. The chain which connects the body to the soul is the false ego. And because you think you, because you identify yourself with the false ego, which is connected to the intelligence, which is connected to the mind, and mind is connected to the body, therefore, whatever happens to the body, you think it is happening to you. Because of false ego, we think we are the body. Ahankar. I am very powerful. Right? You are very proud. But actually, this body may be powerful, but you are the same size as any other fellow. When you identify yourself with the body, and think that, oh ho, I am this, I am so and so, I am so and so, that is called ahankar. So in this way, the subtle body is the covering for the soul, and the gross body covers the subtle body. And what is death? Death means death of the gross body only. The subtle body doesn't die. The subtle body takes the soul to another body. And therefore, many a times, due to particular kind of karma, which we'll discuss tomorrow, a person starts remembering his past life. Because the subtle body is there. All the impressions is actually made in the subtle body. The gross body dies, but it's the subtle body that takes to the gross body. And till you find a subtle body, you are in a in-between state. That's a ghostly existence. Ghostly existence means there is no gross body and the subtle body is looking for a suitable gross body. So in this way, the body can be divided into two, gross and subtle, and then there is the soul. So this is matter, gross to subtle, but all this is matter, whereas spirit soul is completely spiritual, eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. Next. Yeah. Now somebody may ask, is it possible that once technology advances, we can start creating human beings? Can man manufacture a machine which will act exactly like a human being? Or rather, can we, technology advance to one stage, we will start manufacturing human beings? Take an Einstein and make 50 Xerox copies so that we need such kind of people. Is it possible? Absolutely not. Because any amount of chemical combination cannot create life, cannot create soul. Soul cannot be created, soul cannot be destroyed. Soul is eternal. No one can manufacture a soul. And therefore, machines are designed by or programmed by humans, but machines in and of themselves cannot have feelings, cannot have all the cognizance like the human beings or any other animals. You can create something like an animal, but you can't create another animal because you can't create a soul. Soul cannot be created. And soul cannot be manipulated. It is totally spiritual. It's beyond the material realm of existence. Next. Because humans have an independent consciousness. A machine can be programmed. A robot can be programmed. When you walk home, you can be programmed to say, oh, welcome. I'm very happy to see you. I love you very much. Just to make you feel happy. You may program the computer to say it. But it does not feel it. It has no sense. You can program it to curse you also. But a person, an individual is different because there is consciousness. Yeah, next. So somebody may say, wow, thank you very much. Now I am self-realized. I cannot be killed. I am eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. And therefore, I am God. No one can kill me. No weapons can destroy me. What is the difference between God and a living entity like all of us? Let us discuss that. We are not gods, but we are God apostrophe S. We belong to God. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamaivamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanah. Manashashta anindriyani prakatisthanikarshati. It's a very important statement. In the 15th chapter, 7th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Mama eva aunshah jivaloke. In this creation, jivaloke, jivabhuta, all the living entities are Mama eva aunshaha. They are all my tiny part and parcel. They are all tiny fragments of mine. How? For few moments, sanatanaha. All the living entities, living sparks, the souls, are eternally tiny part of Krishna. If Krishna is the body, then we are all like the finger. Right? The finger is a part of the body. The finger is not the body. Similarly, all of us, all the living entities, fragment souls, are part of God. And therefore, when we purify ourselves, we become godly. We don't become God. We become godly. And the more we get covered over by matter, in thinking that I am this body, we become ungodly. Lust, anger, envy, everything takes over. So therefore, we have to realize we are not the body, we are the soul. And the soul is part of God. And if it is part of God, it has to serve God. Just like if the finger wants to be happy, it can't put itself in a bucket of halwa and say, I will enjoy this. The finger has to take the food and put it into the stomach. If all the body parts cooperate to feed the stomach, then everyone becomes happy. All the body parts becomes nourished. So all the living entities are meant to serve God because they are His parts. The part is meant to serve the whole. That is called self-realization. To realize we are not the body, we are the soul. That is first step. The second step is to realize that the soul is part of God. And if we are part of God, we have to serve God. We can never become God. It's not that once you become self-realized, you become God. No. After self-realization, you become godly. One in quality, but not in quantity. Next. What is the difference between soul and God? Every soul is called Jivatma. Not only humans, in all the different species, they are called Jivatma. One tiny spark. Whereas God is called Paramatma. Paramatma. He is a super soul. Or he is big. We are small and he is very big. That is the difference. Next. Yeah, we are infinite. We are Anu. And he is Vibhu. He is infinite. And we are infinitely small. Very, very infinitesimal. Whereas he is infinite. He is unlimited and we are limited. Next. In terms of our power, in terms of our intelligence, in terms of our beauty, in terms of our fame, everything. We are tiny, but he is very, very big. We are cognizant of our own body. We are cognizant of our own body. Right? If my toe is aching, I am aware. If my stomach is aching, I am aware. But you are not aware of what's happening in my body.